Everybody knows it. Toyota trucks are the stuff of legends. Rugged, durable, everlasting, Toyota makes trucks that just don't quit. And now, Toyota is driving that legacy toward the future with two of their most powerful trucks ever, the new Tundra and the all-new Tacoma.
In a half-ton Tundra, you can rule the roads from the comfort of a spacious cabin with connected tech and plenty of hauling power. The Tundra is ready to work hard and play even harder.
Or check out the all-new 24 Tacoma, redesigned and electrified to maximize your adventure. With a bevy of available off-road driving and power transfer modes, you will effortlessly crush the conditions. And with the Tacoma's reimagined interior, you'll do it in style.
And right now, your local Toyota dealer has more vehicles in stock and is making delivery on new vehicles almost every day.
So don't wait. Buy a Tundra or Tacoma today. Visit buyatoyota.com for deals and more.
Toyota, let's go places.
Domingo Santana, ooh, I wanna have ya. Tanaka's Fakata, Jack like Michael Walker, Polanco and Franco.
Ooh, they're gonna have you get into first place. Check batted by data and swinging strike rates. Raisins are shriveled grapes. Here's Adam's happy place.
Happy Kokomo Friday, and welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today, presented by Line and Kugels. More on their great beverages later on in the podcast. The band is back together. Let's see if we make it through the entire podcast together. Frank Stanfill, joined by Scott White and Chris Towers today on the podcast. Week 14 sleepers, two-star pitchers, the prospect report. Are these players good? Zach Davies currently has a no-hitter through six innings against the Dodgers. I repeat, Zach Davies, no-hitter. Dodgers,
but many Walker.
Yes, many Walkers. That's five Walkers and Walker Buehler. We're going to talk a lot about him too. Fantasy justice and more. No time to waste. Let's jump right in.
Oh my goodness gracious.
Shout out to everybody who left Apple Podcast ratings and reviews this week supporting Oh My Goodness Gracious. I see all of you and I appreciate you. Let's start with Chris. How you doing, bud? Chris, let's go. Oh My Goodness Gracious standout from Thursday. Who you got?
Well, I guess we're going to do this every day with some pitcher, and today it's a Dodger again. So Walker Buehler had a decent start today. Six innings, three earned runs, six strikeouts, two walks. Kind of like Trevor Bowers yesterday, actually. A little better control, but the biggest thing, he had maybe one of the most dramatic drops in spin rate that I've ever seen for a pitcher this season. His fastball... four-seam fastball spin rate was down 277 RPMs. His cutter was down 327. His knuckle curve was 339. His slider was 289. I mean, we're talking like when we've talked about a lot of these spin rate changes, we've been talking about like, well, his was down like 125 or his was down 150. And, you know, this is like a 10% or more drop for... It's more than 10% for all of his pitches except for the slider. So that is really, really significant. He also, unlike Trevor Bauer last night, was not throwing harder to make up for it. So, you know, it's like he only had 10 whiffs in this start on 103 pitches. Maybe those two things are related. It's still a one start sample size and you can't take too much out of it. And he was, you know, pitching very well up until that sixth inning when he gave up a two-run homer to Wilson Contreras with two outs. If he had been able to get that out, we're probably talking about this game a little differently. But, you know, Walker Buehler, I mean, there's a fine line between success and something less than success in Major League Baseball for everyone. But in Walker Buehler's case, there have been warning signs in his profile all season long. I mean, he has the worst expected ERA of his career. And I think that's not including tonight's start. He has the lowest strikeout rate of his career. He does also have one of the best walk rates of his career entering this start. So it's not all been bad. But, you know, he's looked a lot like the A's version of Walker Buehler that we've seen this season until you look under the hood, and then it's just a little bit off. And, you know, with a dip in spin rate and, you know, maybe even fewer strikeouts, it's something to keep an eye on. As with all of this, I hesitate to say anything definitive about what the impact will be on Walker Buehler's performance moving forward, but, you know, he was one of the biggest swing rate or spin rate gainers in baseball this season. So it's, you know, it's
maybe he's
something to watch.
Maybe he's better off without the spin. How much had he gained? I didn't even think to look at that with Walker Buehler.
Actually, I guess it hadn't been as dramatic as I thought. It was earlier. It's only been about 60 RPM over the course of the season. But that's also, you know, his velocity is down 1.5 miles per hour from 2020.
And it was down, I think, especially early. But yeah, I if he hadn't come out and pitched the sixth, it would have looked like a very typical Walker Buehler start. And as it was still a quality start.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I agree. This is the most dramatic drop in spin rate I've seen for a starting pitcher so far. Tyler Matzek, a reliever for the Braves, was like 400 to 500 RPM. He was lost.
He's been one of those guys. Every time I look at a box score, tune into a Braves game and he's in, I'm just like, where the heck did Tyler Matzek start doing all this stuff?
Yeah. This is obviously still an evolving situation. We've seen several pitchers lose a lot of spin for several starts. Now we're seeing another round of pitchers lose spin. And even some from that first round are losing even more spin, I would guess, because they were weaning themselves off the hard stuff with something like sunscreen and rosin, or, you know, as opposed to just quitting cold turkey. So we still don't have a huge sample for any pitcher of what this means performance wise. The broad view, though, can you guys think of a pitcher who just looks broken because of this? A starting pitcher anyway, like they've lost a lot of spin and now they appear broken. Trevor Bauer doesn't look as overpowering.
Yeah,
Cole hasn't looked quite as overpowering.
Bauer's probably the one that I would say, just because of what we've seen from him in his career. I wouldn't say broken, but I'm getting pre-2020 Bauer vibes from him.
Yeah, he's probably the one that I worry about the most, though what you brought up the other day, Scott, it was since the middle of May, Gerrit Cole's swinging strike rate has been right around league average, so that's obviously concerning.
And I'm not saying it has no effect, but I don't know. I'm kind of sticking with my original hunch that it's going to be kind of like when we see players busted for PED use, where, you know, it's not like they come back and they're a deflated beach ball, you know. Yeah. Like it's not like they suddenly don't know how to hit a baseball anymore.
One thing I would say, just like as a general rule, if I had to like assign some kind of, like my assumption of what this would mean, would just, I think the biggest thing is it will probably make specifically fastballs less effective at generating swings and misses. And that's something that we've seen over the last couple of seasons, that, you know, spin rate on fastballs is highly correlated with whiff rate. You know, a 25% whiff rate on a fastball is really, really good. If you can do that, I mean, Brandon Woodruff is kind of the king of fastball whiff rate, and he's usually in like the 28 to 30% range. But we see a lot of pitchers in that 25% range right now. And, you know, maybe we see pitchers have to rely on their fastball a little less. Maybe we see a few more walks because generate the swings and misses, they have to throw their secondary stuff more, which can still be very effective, but obviously tougher to control.
It was a trend from a couple years ago, pitchers throwing way more breaking balls. And I still think, like, from a, in a historical sense, you see a lot more breaking balls than ever before. For Walker Buehler specifically, one reason I'm not that concerned about the drop in spin here is, like, he followed such a conventional development path, you know, like, elite prospect, he comes up and he's a good pitcher right away, and he's been like a good pitcher ever since anybody heard his name.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's not like he came out of nowhere and like, how's this guy doing this?
And also the fact that, you know, the spin rate, you know, who knows whether it was making him more effective this season anyway. Yeah. You know, the underlying numbers, the concern for me is not as much the spin rate as it is Like if he's throwing 95 with his fastball now, if that's his average fastball velocity, or 94, which I think it was in this start. For me, the concern is more, you know, what does it look like when that catches up to him? You know, he's been, you know, if he's been able to get away with it so far, diminished velocity with increased spin rate. Now, if he's looking at diminished velocity and diminished spin rate, does that have kind of a duplicative, I think is the word I was looking for.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, like maybe the increased spin rate was covering up for less fastball effectiveness because of the velocity. That's the thing I want to see. But I think the answer to all of these is we don't know. We need more data.
Yes.
So, you know, that's where we're at right now, I think.
Walker Buehler's fastball did average 95.1 miles per hour today. A little bit down from where he's been at this season. And overall, it is down from where it was last year. I think there's still just going to be natural regression. And I don't know if people are going to point to the spin rates as a reason for it. But all of his ERA indicators are in the mid threes. And at this point, he's got a 2.51 ERA. So I think just looking at it, like natural regression was expected. He's not getting as many whiffs this year or strikeouts just in general. So I think that's worth noting as well. Yeah. But Walker Buehler,
although it's not like he actually had a higher xFIP last year than he has this year.
Yeah.
And the xERA is similar. So
it's worth noting
really the swinging strike rate's not down that much. He's never been like a huge swinging strike guy, Walker Buehler.
Yeah.
Yeah. Coming into the season, I would say we probably had among pitchers being drafted in the first, I guess, four or five rounds. We had the biggest concerns about Glasnow and Walker Buehler in terms of what their workload was going to be. Yeah. Buehler has made 15 starts. All 15 of them, he's gone six innings. That is
only happened amazing. Once last year.
That's amazing. The fact that he's been that efficient and he's given you eight straight quality starts. So even with all of this that's going on, Walker Buehler has been really, really good. So I'm not lowering him in my rankings. It sounds like you guys aren't doing that either, but obviously we will continue to monitor his spin rate. Scott, your oh my goodness gracious player from Thursday.
All right. So I don't think we're going to spend 12 minutes on this one, but Tony Sentian
of the
Reds making his third career start. It was by far his best one. He allowed one run on three hits in six innings, struck out eight, walked three, had 18 swinging strikes, including 13 on the slider, basically just two pitches. He threw a few changeups too, but not that many. You know, his first two starts were not anything that would raise anybody's interest. He four walks in the first start, two home runs in the second start. In the minors at AAA this year, his numbers were good, 12.5 K per nine. The walk rate was kind of high. The walk rate's been kind of high throughout his minor league career. And even in this start, three walks in six innings. He's also given up a lot of fly balls so far, and the Reds obviously play in a small ballpark. So I'm not saying Tony Sentian is about to break through as a stud here, but he showed some potential, obviously, with that many whiffs. And if you're hurting for pitching, it might be worth a flyer.
Tony Sentian is 6% rostered on CBS, and it looks like he is in line for two starts next week at home for both against the Padres and the Cubs. I have waivers that run tonight on Thursday night when we're recording this in a 15-team league, and I currently have a $3 bid in a $100 fab on Tony Sentian. Again, 15-team roto. So I think those are probably leagues where you should be looking at him. Chris, any interest in starting him with those matchups next week versus the Padres and the Cubs at home?
Probably not with a guy who's giving up a lot of fly balls, you know, especially against the Padres. That's a team that can really hurt you. And you know, you look at the profile and it's kind of like a Wasker and Noah light right now. Basically all sliders, all fastballs, but he doesn't throw quite as hard as Inoa. And, you know, Inoa was basically doing the Denelson Lamet thing. And one thing that all those pitchers have in common is lots of swings and miss, lots of strikeouts. But if he commands that can bleed into poor control and also a lot of home runs and certainly a lot of risk of home runs. So, you know, Sentian is a lesser version of those guys. I think he's, you know, probably pretty fringy for fantasy.
Oh my goodness gracious for me, Akil Baddoo. We've talked about quite a bit recently, but he went 3-for-5 with two doubles, now has 12 hits over his last seven games, and he's batting 282 on the season with a 13% walk rate, and has led off back-to-back games for the Detroit Tigers. He is 29% rostered. The biggest issue I see, he's awful against lefties. Yeah. He's gone 3-for-26 against them so far this season, and you know he probably won't play against them moving forward, but I kind of feel like in maybe not 12-team leagues with five outfielders, but anything deeper, I would make sure that Akil Badu is rostered.
Yeah, I think even in a 12-team five outfielder league, okay, he's worth having on your team. You know, basically, you look at what he's done this season. He got off to a really good start, and he was kind of one of the early season surprises. He went through a 5-for-50 slump from about mid-April to mid-May, where he struck out 52% of the time.
Oh, my gosh.
But since May 11th, he is now hitting 367 with 21 walks and 19 strikeouts.
Wow.
The vast majority of those plate appearances have come against right-handed pitchers. He's got a 954 OPS against them, and he's got 6 steals in his last 31 games in that span too. So, you know, you add it all up and he's not playing every day, but that still sounds like a pretty valuable player for a roto league, where stolen bases are so scarce. That I think he is worth having in a 12-team five outfielder league as someone who you can slide into your lineup.
And it might be one of those situations, Chris, where it's better off that he doesn't play against lefties.
Sure.
He won't give you as much volume, but his batting average is going to be better if he only plays against righties.
Yeah, I mean, that based on what we've seen right now so far in the majors, he's looking like an absolute righty masher. And if he can settle in as a 20% strikeout rate guy against righties, like he has been, you know, for the last month and a half, there's a lot of value in that. If he can also be a, you know, a 25 to 30 stolen base pace guy.
I wanted to bring up Daz Cameron as well, his teammate. And we've talked about him recently, former top prospect, top ish. He's a former prospect. We'll call him that. He had 2 more hits with a walk, an RBI, and a run scored on Thursday. He's 4% rostered. The Tigers have 6 games next week. He has started 4 of the last 5 games for Detroit, and in those 4 games, he has 7 hits. So he's been pretty hot. Scott, any interest in Daz Cameron in deeper leagues? I have 15-team, 5 outfielder leagues. I know you do too. I kind of feel like he should be rostered there.
Yeah, I mean, he might be getting to that point. He's a pretty undisciplined hitter, and even in the minor leagues, his production had dropped off a lot leading up to the promotion. Pretty good this year in 18 games. So, you know, maybe he's figured something out. There's obviously some speed there. Son of Mike Cameron, very athletic player, played a long time, was known mostly for his defense, but very fast, had some power.
Underrated player, Mike Cameron.
I think Daz Cameron is I don't think he's... It would be hard to rate as good defensively as his dad, but I think offensively he profiles pretty similarly, which isn't useless, but, you know, not going to be high-end either.
The Cubs have removed Zach Davies from the game with a no-hitter intact, and they still have a no-hitter through 7 innings. Ryan Tepera came in the 7th, so we'll update you on that throughout the course of the podcast. And someone else that was pulled in the middle of a no-hitter was Nick Pivetta, who, just give him a shout-out here at the top, part of the standouts from Thursday at the Tampa Bay Rays, 6 2/3, no hit innings, 2 walk, 8 strikeouts, 14 swinging strikes on 100 pitches. But even after this, his ERA is 4.00 on the season. 2 starts next week versus the Royals at the Oakland A's. I'm not going to poo-poo it because it was a great performance, but Nick Pivetta is just kind of meh to me.
One thing I will point out is he's been throwing his slider less in the month of June because the results have been really bad on it. His best pitch today was the curveball, but the slider was very good today as well. And so, you know, if he can have the feel for both of those pitches as, you know, both a swing and miss and a strike throwing pitch, which he, you know, in spurts has been able to do, especially early this season. Yeah, maybe there's something there.
81% rostered. Scott, a little sneak peek. Is he one of the 2-star pitchers you like for next week?
I missed the name, Frank.
Nick Pivetta.
Nick Pivetta. He wasn't, but that was before this start. His previous 3 starts were pretty awful. Mm-hmm. So I'm probably going to have to adjust my 2-star pitcher rankings for next week after this start. especially given that his first matchup is against the Royals.
Somebody who felt the wrath of Nick Pivetta most in this start was Wander Franco, who went 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts. So his first really bad performance. However, it did come with his first stolen base of the season. So nice to see Wander Franco running, but strikeouts, not so nice. Before we get to the news and notes, reminder that you can subscribe to our YouTube channel if you're watching us. That's youtube.com/fantasybaseballtoday. And we have some programming updates. On Thursday, we dropped a 20-minute video highlighting the top prospects in the MLB draft for those in dynasty leagues that are already thinking about first-year player drafts for if you do it later this year, if you do it in the beginning of 2022. And when I say we, it was the Welsh, Chris Welsh, and myself who did those videos. Obviously, you know Welsh used to host this podcast, super knowledgeable about all of baseball, but in particular prospects. He knows quite a bit there, and on Friday we'll have a longer video that will come out with current top prospects, Wander Franco, Jaron Duran, Vidal Brujan, and more. Again, that one was with the Welsh, and I'll drop the audio in the podcast feed as well. We have an awesome giveaway for you. CBS Sports and Westinghouse are teaming up to give away a 55-inch TV, portable power station, and an air purifier over the next month. Go to cbssports.com/homerun. That's HOMERUN to enter. We'll put the link in the episode description as well. Contest ends July 31st. That's cbssports.com/homerun. No purchase necessary. 18 or over. Must be located in the United States. News and notes from Thursday. Lucas Sims, might explain why he was so bad the other day, was placed on the IL with a right elbow sprain and is expected to miss the next 3 to 4 weeks. Is it TJ Antone? Is it Amir Garrett? Nope. No. It's Brad Brock, who picked up his first save since 2018. He's got a 2.63 ERA and a 1.17 whip. 0% rostered on CBS. Any interest in Brad Brock?
If you're in like a 15-team league and you need saves and you're, you know, that's the kind of thing where if you're in a league where waivers run every night, put in a claim on him and see. Just because Garrett has done nothing this season to deserve a high leverage role, frankly. I mean, his ERA is still over 8. Antone's been awesome, but they don't seem to want to use him as a closer. You know, they seem to value him in a multi-inning role, and he did give up a run in this one to make it a 2-run game. So there's at least at the very least, Brad Brock got the most recent save. I don't know if that means he'll get the next one. That hasn't really been a reliable indicator for the Reds this season, but they had settled on roles before Sims' injury, so maybe they'll just slot Brock in there.
Yeah. We'll see. Again, David Bell and the Reds, they've kind of been all over the place all season long. Recently, it looked like it was going to be Lucas Sims, but if there are 3 lefties coming up in the 9th, can I tell you for certain that Amir Garrett's not going to be in there for the save? I can't, unless he pitched earlier in the game. So keep that in mind. Brad Brock, widely available, actually available in every single CBS league. Corey Seager remains on track to return in early July. John Means will likely be sidelined until after the All-Star break with that shoulder injury. Sonny Gray on the IL with a groin injury will now make his rehab start on Saturday after he woke up with a stiff back. He's dealt with back injuries over the past few seasons as well.
Baseball players, they're just like us.
Yeah, who would have thought? Aaron Civale was officially placed in the IL. He'll miss the next 4 to 5 weeks with that sprained middle finger. His teammate Zach Plesac threw a 40-pitch bullpen session on Thursday and could start a rehab assignment soon. Max Fried should return from the IL next Thursday. He's dealing with a blister on his left index finger. There's a good chance Brandon Belt lands on the IL with this knee injury. And I was going to say, maybe go out and add Joey Bart in 2 catcher leagues in case he gets called up, but I did not realize that neither him nor Buster Posey have played a single game at first base this year. So
not one.
Who was playing first base when Belt was on the IL earlier this season?
Oh, I think it was a combination of Darren Ruff and
Wilmer Flores. Was he part of that rotation?
I couldn't tell you. It was Darren Ruff.
I'm blanking on the name, but
I know it was Lamont Wade Jr.
Former Twins guy.
Wasn't
Lamont
Wade Jr.
Yeah.
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 So
Lamont Wade, that's it.
Yeah. I mean, those all sound like, I guess Darren Ruff could also play first. I don't know. Those all sound like pretty terrible names, but given the way the last two seasons have gone for the Giants, they'll probably have like an 840 OPS.
Yeah. Mark Canha exited Thursday with a left hip strain. He'll undergo an MRI on Friday. Canha was replaced by our boy, your boy, Scott, Tony Kemp. And if anything happens to Canha, might mean more playing time for Kemp. Josh Donaldson returned to the lineup after missing five straight games. Josh Bell was scratched because of side soreness. Ryan Zimmerman has an 820 OPS this season for anybody in NL-only leagues. The Rays placed Taylor Walls on the IL with right wrist tendonitis. Christian Arroyo was placed on the IL with a right knee contusion, retroactive to June 21st. Michael Chavis started and was leading off on Thursday. And Scott, it sounds like a good time to shift Kike Hernandez back to second base and call up Jaron Duran.
So I guess my question with Duran is, would they call him up before the Olympics? Because he's on the Olympic roster. He was away from the AAA team to play in the Olympic qualifiers. Would they be willing to call him up and say, hey, you're not playing in the Olympics?
Why wouldn't they?
I don't know. I mean, I could just see that, like, if that's something Jaron Duran really wants to do.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. When he was on the Olympic qualifier team, the Red Sox beat writers, I saw several Red Sox beat writers say something to the effect of, you know, this probably won't change the timeline of him getting called up at some point in June. So they weren't even granting the possibility that he might play in the Olympics.
Okay.
But I don't know. I haven't seen anything from Duran specifically.
Look, maybe if you've been an American.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't know that that's going to come into play with the decision here. And he's been so hot.
Yeah.
Jaron Duran has been over the past week plus. He's got his batting average up near 300 now, when it was down around 250 when he first came back from the Olympic qualifier event.
He had 8 home runs in his first 199 games. He has 13 and 32 this season.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's not counting how high he was in spring training.
Yeah. We saw him in spring too. I mean, he looks bulked up, right? So he used to be known for mainly his hit tool, his speed. He had over 40 steals back in 2019. Comes back to spring training. Guy's looking pretty jacked up. So he worked on his body, developed some power, and it's...
Change the swing. Work with one of those famous hitting gurus. I can't remember which one, but those guys... One of those guys that's been cited as turning some other player around in the past. And
sounds like he's hungry like the wolf.
Oh, man. One of the things Scott said was he's so hot right
now. I think the hitting coach's name is Rio.
All right. You can listen to our prospect updates with the Welsh, where he goes in depth talking about Jaron Duran's ankles, if that's something that interests you as well. So, check that out. Steven Matz threw about 60 pitches in a live batting practice on Thursday and is expected to start next week. Tucker Davidson was transferred to the 60-day IL with that left forearm injury. Scott White's prospect report came out on Thursday. You could find it on the site right now. I'll throw it in the podcast description so you can follow along. And Scott, you started your prospect report talking about Bobby Witt Jr., who is en fuego. The guy is red hot right now at AA, but in particular, you mentioned that Dayton Moore, the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, says that Adalberto Mondesi's injury will not impact Bobby Witt Jr.'s timeline.
Which is the obvious line to say. So, you know, it needs to be presented that this is the official stance from the Royals. We talked about it when Adalberto Mondesi got hurt. I suspect Witt at age 21, with the Royals being 8 or 9 games back in the AL Central, recently turned 21, by the way, just earlier this month. I doubt he's going to skip AAA. I think he's very close, as hot as he's been in June, and it hasn't just been the fact that he's batting about 350. His strikeout rate is way down too. So I think he's on the verge of a promotion to AAA, and it may only be a short stay at AAA before he gets called to the majors. I did leave him out of my top five to stash. It might be the last week I leave him out of my top five to stash. I thought there were five who were more like any day status than Bobby Witt was. But yeah, I mean, he's certainly making a push now and is really, really shown a lot of improvement in just 2 months' time.
Bobby Witt Jr. currently 50% rostered on CBS, and the five that are on the verge of getting the call, according to Scott White, Jared Kelnick, Jaron Duran, Vidal Bruján, Joe Adell, and Cal Raleigh, the catcher prospect for the Seattle Mariners, who we spoke about in depth last week. Joe Adell, the guy's hitting for a ton of power. He's got 16 home runs. He's batting .271, but he still has a 32% strikeout rate. Even if you look at it month over month, he's not improving. It's been over 30% each month so far. So I don't know if they're technically working on his swing with him in the minors, or they're just like, hey, go figure it out. But whatever they're trying, it's not really working, because you call him up with a 30% strikeout rate in AAA, what's going to happen in the majors? 35%, 40%?
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, that's a good point. I can't imagine they leave Joe Adell in the minors all season long after he got called up last year. And I think he's still currently leading the minors in home runs. So it may just be that he's going to be a guy who strikes out a ton and there's no way around it. I do think there's going to be less urgency here to call him up soon, because Taylor Ward's already started, you know, actually producing at the plate a little bit in June, and Mike Trout is inching ever closer to a return. And then what will the incentive be to call Adell up? I don't know. I may be close to moving Bobby Witt ahead of Adell in terms of how I prioritize them in redraft leagues. But I'm not quite there yet. I still wouldn't be terribly surprised if we found out tomorrow that Joe Adell is coming up.
The five prospects on the periphery: Edward Cabrera, a starting pitcher with the Marlins; Reed Detmers, a starting pitcher with the Angels; Gabriel Moreno, a catcher for the Blue Jays; Ethan Small, a pitcher for the Brewers; and Kevin Smith, a shortstop for the Blue Jays. Chris, real quick on Edward Cabrera, obviously prospect for the Marlins. And yeah, you know, I saw last year, heading into 2020, within Marlins circles, that some people thought Edward Cabrera could be better than Sixto Sanchez. What do you think?
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily the consensus viewpoint, but it wasn't a super unpopular one. And, you know, one thing that I looked up was some reports of what he was doing at the alternate site. And there were some indications that he had really taken a step forward with his changeup at the alternate site. And he was already, you know, a guy who throws in the high 90s with a very good slider. So if he's got a changeup now that he can throw consistently, you know, that could make him a very, very viable starting pitcher. He's probably the Marlins' third best starting pitching prospect, depending on how you view Sixto. Max Meyer, their first round pick last year, is considered the top one. But Cabrera, I mean, you know, the Marlins, as good as the top three has been, they've been kind of rotating some guys through the last two spots. So it wouldn't surprise me if Edward Cabrera got called up in a few weeks. You know, he's only thrown 10 innings so far this season because he was dealing with a nerve issue. So that's, you know, that's the bigger issue right now. You know, he's not someone to stash yet.
We are going to take a quick break, but when we return, we're going to help you get ready for next week, next here on Fantasy Baseball Today. True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed. The Week 14 Pitcher and Hitter Planner is presented by Leinen Kugels. And in terms of scheduling, it's a very busy week. Next week, 17 teams have 7 games, 12 teams have 6 games, and one lonely team has 5 games next week. That is the Tampa Bay Rays. And I think you can bench guys like Brandon Lau and Joey Wendell, who are kind of fringy at this point. I would keep Randy Arozarena in the lineup and Wander Franco. The one that I'm kind of on the fence here, Chris, what do you think about Austin Meadows? 5 games, 3 against lefties, who he has been awful against this year.
Yeah, I think you probably want to sit him. I think if you were going to rank all the outfielders, Austin Meadows with 5 games, 3 against lefties probably doesn't make it inside the top 50 for next week.
Yeah, yeah, it's a pretty rough week there for Austin Meadows and the Tampa Bay Rays.
Yes, Wander Franco did strike out 3 times Thursday.
Yeah.
I think he also stole a base.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We got another weekend to see if he deserves to be started in this 5-game week.
Let's jump into the 2 start pitchers. Scott, who are you looking at for week 14?
Okay. So 2 start pitchers, Jameson Taillon, who just turned in one of his best starts. Was it his best start of the season?
It was only his second quality start of the season.
Yeah. I know it had been a while since he had one of those. It was against the Royals. He went 6 1/3 innings, allowed 1 earned run, struck out 6. His spin rates have been fine for what it's worth. His performance hasn't been fine this season, but I don't know. I think there's a chance he starts to get in a groove here, because like the pure stuff still looks pretty good. And two start week, Angels and Mets. So he's pretty high on the list here. Chris Flexen, who we mentioned, is on a nice run. The last 2 starts, the swinging strikes have been way up too. Not totally trusting in him in a long-term sense, but 2 start week. One of them is against the Rangers. So he's kind of interesting. Danny Duffy's in line for 2 starts. I don't know that it might be a 3-inning start and a 4-inning start, but certainly stuff-wise, he looked awesome in his return Wednesday. And, you know, if you can live without getting a win from him, just the fact he lines up for 2 starts might not be a bad play. Caleb Smith at St. Louis, that's a good matchup versus San Francisco. That one, not so much, but he has good numbers. He's been putting out delivering quality starts, or at least like an inning shy of quality starts since moving into the rotation. I don't trust him much at all, frankly, because he doesn't look as overpowering as he did in his most the days of his of peak interest for Caleb Smith with the Marlins. He hasn't looked like that. So I'm skeptical, but 2-start week, 1 good matchup. I think he deserves to be on the list here. Some 1-star pitchers. We got Ross Stripling, who I'm starting to come around on Ross Stripling. I was reading an article from earlier this month about how the Blue Jays discovered he was tipping his pitches earlier this year. And if you look at the swinging strike rate over the entire, I think it's 5-6 appearance stretch, you know, over which the turnaround has taken place, the swinging strike rate for that whole span is similar to his good years with the Dodgers. 1 start has a lot to do with that. I think he had like 18 swinging strikes in 1 start. And if you take that out, okay, it doesn't look so great. But you combine that with the pitch tipping story, and maybe Ross Stripling is figuring it out. He goes against the Rays. Logan Gilbert against the Rangers. Jake Odorizzi at Cleveland. Coming off a 9 strikeout effort, he looks like he's coming around. JT Brubaker, he's always on this list, and he's going against the Brewers, and he had 9 strikeouts last time. Yeah, I think that those would be my favorite 1-star guys.
JT Brubaker is like the CJ Cron of your sleeper pitchers.
Oh, yeah.
You've always got to have him on the list.
Guess who my number 1 sleeper hitter is this week? Oh, well,
7 games for the Rockies next week at home. I can only guess. Chris, Jameson Taillon, who we spoke about, coming off his best start of the season on Thursday against the Royals. He's 61% rostered. Scott mentioned the matchups, Angels and Mets at home. Surprisingly enough, Taillon has a 3.29 ERA at home. Do you consider Jameson Taillon a must-add if he was dropped in your league?
No, certainly not a must-add. I have enough questions about both how effective he'll be in the short term and, you know, how high the upside really is, that he's not not someone that if he's on the waiver wire, I'm making a huge effort to go get, but he's fine to add. I don't think he's a must start guy with two starts either.
Scott, some sleeper hitters for next week. You already kind of alluded to one, which I assume is Jonathan Daza, of course.
No, CJ Cron, who really heated up last week when the Rockies were at home, and Zomwe splits look about what you'd expect for a Rockies hitter. So not only are the Rockies at home, but I think the toughest pitcher they're facing in those seven games at home next week is Adam Wainwright. The second toughest is Carlos Martinez, who's been pretty awful this year. So really good matchups for the Rockies. That's why I also like Brendan Rodgers. He's my number two sleeper hitter for this upcoming week. His June numbers look great, by the way, and he's been playing close to every day. I think he might be having might be sneaking under the radar because it hasn't been like this. Wow, Brendan Rodgers hit 6 home runs in 12 games, but you know he's just contributing in a steady way there. Abraham Toro has been solid as a replacement for Alex Bregman, and the Astros have the third best hitter matchups this week. Hunter Renfro, you look at his lefty-righty splits. The Red Sox are facing 4 lefties in 7 games this week, so it seems like he might be a decent play. I like the Brewers matchups this week. They're the 5th best hitter matchups, and I have Luis Arias, who's come around in June. I have him on this list. Willy Adames, Colton Wong. I couldn't quite fit him in, but Avisal Garcia, I don't think is a bad play with these matchups. He has gone back to slumping in June after a very strong May. So I'm not as high on him, but you know, not a bad play if you need an extra outfielder.
Nice to see Chris's boy, Willy Adames, on that list. We spoke about him quite a bit on yesterday's podcast. And just to round out those 5 teams with the best hitter matchups, that includes the Rockies, the Cardinals, the Astros, the Angels, and the Brewers. And the 5 teams with the worst hitter matchups, the Rays, the Cubs, the Twins, the Dodgers, and the Nationals. So there you have it, the Week 14 Pitcher and Hitter Planners presented by Line and Kugels. And the weekend is here. I'm feeling a little lemon haze IPA. It's a well-balanced, hazy IPA that blends hops with delicious lemonade. And truthfully, I'm not really big on IPAs, but this one is different. I actually really, really enjoy it. Big, big fan of the Lemon Haze IPA from Line and Kugels. And of course, the Lemon Haze IPA is not all they offer. They also have their Session Helles, which has all the flavor of a crisp German-style beer, but it's only 99 calories. And of course, the GOAT, the Line and Kugels Summer Shandy. Awesome blend of crisp beer with refreshing lemonade that fits perfectly when watching a baseball game, either live at the game or on your television, because I can confirm both. They have it at Citi Field. Shout out to Citi Field. Great taste in beer. So no matter what type of beverage you are craving, Line and Kugels has you covered. Just head on over to liney.com. That's LEINIE.com. Or follow Line and Kugels on Instagram or Facebook for more information about all of the delicious beers that they brew. I realize that we are about 40 minutes in here, and we have not mentioned Kyle Schwarber, who is just
ridiculous. Like we're reaching the point where Kyle Schwarber hitting a home run is a dog bites man story. Let me know when Kyle Schwarber doesn't hit a home run.
Seriously, right? It's the guy is on a tear right now. A double dong on Thursday. He's now up to 21 home runs for the season. He has 8 home runs over his last 5 games. And since May 1st, Schwarber has a 92-mile-per-hour exit velocity with a 19% barrel rate. That was entering Thursday. I assume it only went up after hitting 2 more home runs. The league average, if I'm reading this correctly, if one of you guys want to confirm, the league average barrel rate is 6.5%. Does that sound right? It sounds low.
That sounds low.
Sounded low when I saw it too, but I might be reading it wrong. Either way,
let me look into that.
Kyle Schwarber is destroying baseballs right now. The reason why we didn't talk about him earlier, I mean, it's not really much else to say, right? It's like he's already owned in your league, I assume, rostered in your league.
He has 12 home runs in his last 13 games.
It's ridiculous.
He had 9 homers in his first 51, he's what, 4th in baseball?
That sounds right. I know Vlad hit another one on Thursday. He's up to 24. That's his league leading. But Schwarber's 87% rostered. He might be out there in some 10-team leagues. So if he is, as long as he's this hot, needs to be universally rostered.
There are a lot of hitters having ridiculous months of June.
Yeah.
The entire Astros lineup, we could start there. And I know I said that in May too, like, oh wow, look at all these hitters having a great May. And, you know, obviously it's not a universal thing. There are some hitters having a bad month of June too. That's just always the way it is. But it's stunning when you look at isolate certain players' numbers just to June. Like, you can tell we're playing in a very different environment right now because they just look positively loopy, especially compared to the numbers we were seeing in April.
Yeah, I mean, the league-wide OPS in April was like 690-ish, like 694 maybe. So far in June, this was entering yesterday, it was 731. So that's a pretty significant difference.
Gary Sanchez is batting over 300 in June.
Gary Sanchez looks great right now. His swing looks completely fixed.
Yeah, someone pointed out to me on Twitter that he's lessened his leg kick, which if you've ever watched Gary Sanchez, he has one of the biggest leg kicks in baseball, and it constantly messes with his timing. So, you know, if he lessens that, makes it kind of like a toe tap thing instead, helps with his timing. And yeah, he's just absolutely destroying balls. His line drive rate and fly ball rate are both way up for the month of June. Strikeout rate still around like 29%. So I think that's expected with Gary Sanchez, but he is crushing the ball right now. Let's talk a little bit more about those Astros. Yes.
8.1% is league average barrel rate.
8.1%. Yeah. So 19% barrel rate for Kyle Schwarber since May 1st.
It's real good.
Ridiculous. The Cubs, by the way, still have a no-hitter through 9 innings. A combined no-hitter. Zach Davies, Ryan Tepera, and Andrew Chafin. I assume Craig Kimbrell will be in the 9th. So let's see what happens there. The Astros, just wanted to get back to them real quick. I know that they faced the Orioles and the Tigers this week, but like after a down season last year, their lineup is back in full force. No doubt in my mind. They lead MLB with 5.74 runs per game, and it's not close. The Dodgers are second, 5.14. So that is like a huge discrepancy. They had 7 hitters with multiple hits on Thursday, including Yordan Alvarez, who is heating up. He had a grand slam, his 3rd home run in the last 4 games. And this is the second time that I'm going to bring up Miles Straw this week. But I think in categories leagues, the guy just went 4-for-6, picked up his 10th steal of the season. He's batting .329 in June now. He's 23% rostered. They have amazing matchups last week, as you highlighted, Scott. They're going up against the Orioles and the Cleveland beat-up pitching staff. I think in 5 outfielder leagues or, you know, even shallower category leagues, if you need steals, I like Miles Straw. He's started 11 straight games. It's cheap exposure to the best lineup in baseball.
Yeah, I can see it. I hate starting the powerless guy.
Yeah.
Even in a 5 outfielder league, it just seems like you really need to make up ground with a bunch of other hitters, and that's hard to do. It's especially hard to make that change in mid-season, but he doesn't look totally useless. Yeah, the lineup's been ridiculous. I mean, we talked about it. Jose Altuve's back to being my number one second baseman. There's no second baseman I want more than Jose Altuve. Carlos Correa's back to being a stud shortstop. Michael Brantley just had his 6th straight multi-hit game. He's batting over .500 in June. Over .500.
Oh, my God.
And I think a couple weeks ago, I pointed out how ridiculous his expected batting average is. It's like, I don't know, maybe even higher now. I think it was .360 at the time. Kyle Tucker, you look at his numbers since April. It was terrible in April, but since then he's been, you know, like a first round caliber bat. and since coming back from the IL, remember he lost 10 pounds because of that stomach bug. 2 multi-hit games back to back since returning. So he seems to be fine.
Yeah. And one of my predictions coming into the season, I guess bolder predictions, was that Carlos Correa would be this year's Corey Seager. And I don't know that he's been that good, but man, he's been really, really good. And I don't know how. I really liked Altuve and Correa, and I don't have many of them, like many shares of either. So I don't know how that happened, but I did like the value on both of them coming into the season. Real quick, the most underrated lineup duo in baseball is from the Pirates. Adam Frazier and Brian Reynolds each had 3 more hits and a home run on Thursday. Frazier is batting .330 while Brian Reynolds is batting .313. I think two of the biggest steals this season. who you might have added. You could have added each of them. I think they were both widely available well into April, maybe even May. And I think they've been one of the most underrated duos in baseball. And I was trying to think of a nickname. I spent way too much time trying to figure this out. But I got two like pretty cool submissions on Twitter. One came from at FF Danny Doinks, and he said Bradham Razor, which is our former host, Adam Azer. I thought that was pretty good. Bradham Razor. And then this one from at PittFan1852, the Babbitt Bandits. That is great. I mean, as the Pirates, these two are top 12 in baseball in batting average on balls in play. So moving forward, Adam Frazier and Brian Reynolds, the Babbitt Bandits. I love it. Are any of these guys good? We'll start with Joe Ross. He was at the Marlins, 7 shutout with 8 strikeouts. He does have a quality start in 3 of his last 4 starts. He is 34% rostered. Chad Kuhl was at the Cardinals, 6 innings, 1 run, only 2 strikeouts. He has a quality start in 3 of his last 4. JC Mejia for Cleveland, he was at the Twins, 6 innings, 1 run, 6 strikeouts. He is 5% rostered. Chris, are any of those names good? Joe Ross, Chad Kuhl, JC Mejia.
I think Ross is probably the most interesting of the group.
You won't say good. You'll say interesting.
Yeah, I don't think. I mean, I think he can be, but maybe that's me sticking to the fact that I thought he was really good back in like 2016. But yeah, no, he's been good recently. Quality starts in 3 of the last 4. He's allowed, I think, 4 earned runs in that time, 26 strikeouts, 4 walks. So,
you know. He's been about as two-faced as Andrew Heaney, I feel like.
Yeah.
Joe Ross has. Like, he either throws a gem or he gives up 8 earned runs. And that's why his ERA is over 4 for the year, even though it seems like he keeps churning out these kinds of starts.
One thing that I do think is promising is I think he had 108 pitch start 2 starts ago, and then they way limited him at the next start out. But, you know, he's consistently been throwing decent pitch totals. And given the fact that he's dealt with a ton of injuries, that seems like a pretty good sign that, you know, they trust him right now.
Yeah, he threw over 100 pitches in this start as well. And during that 4 start stretch where he had 3 quality starts, 26 strikeouts to just 4 walks. So he really is limiting the walks, something that hurt him earlier in the season. Some hitter leftovers from Thursday. Whit Merrifield went 1-for-3 and his 21st steal of the season. He's now 21-for-22 on the base paths. Aaron Judge has been a little bit cold, but he went 3-for-3 with his 16th home run. Gary Sanchez, we mentioned, has an 11.06 OPS in June. Went 2-for-5 with his 13th homer. Luke Voit has homered in 2 of 3 games since coming off the IL. It actually could have been 3 straight games. He just missed a home run, which was turned out to be a walk-off single on Wednesday. Matt Olson had 2 more hits against the lefty. He's batting over 300 against lefties this season. Matt Olson, guy's ridiculous. Lourdes Gurriel went 1-for-4 with a grand slam, his 8th home run of the season. Jazz Chisholm went 2-for-4 with his 9th homer. And since he returned from the IL back in mid-May, he is batting .231 with a 31% strikeout rate, a 60% ground ball rate, and a 20% infield fly ball rate. Chris, should we be benching Jazz Chisholm for now?
I think benching him is fine. I had someone ask if they should drop him for Brandon Rogers. That'd be a tough call. I don't think I would do it. I would hope I have a player with less potential than Jazz, because I mean, even with his struggles, he's still on close to a 30 homer, 25 steal pace for the season. But the strikeout rate has been a concern. I think the plate discipline is going to be an issue moving forward. I had hoped he had kind of figured that out a little bit early on, but you know, it does look like it's going to be something he battles.
Freddie Freeman went 2-for-5 with his 17th home run. He has 6 hits over his last 2 games. So, all right, Freddie Freeman, let's turn it on. Same thing with Juan Soto, who we spoke about yesterday. Jonathan India went 2-for-4 with 2 doubles, a walk, and 3 runs scored. Ho-hum, Jonathan India. We talk about him every day. He's batting .302 over his last 37 games. Scott, I don't know why, but he's still just 65% rostered.
I'm trying, Frank. I'm trying to get that. There's nobody I've hyped harder over the past 3 weeks than Jonathan India. And he keeps justifying it. Yeah, I see no reason why the Reds wouldn't have him continue to hit leadoff as good a job as he's done getting on base. He looks like a good player.
a good player, that Jonathan India, the captain, Jonathan India. I wonder if he still walks out to the Pirates of the Caribbean theme song. He has not a curly mustache, but it's kind of like a piratey mustache. Some pitching leftovers from Thursday. Chris Bassitt at the Rangers, 7 innings, 1 run, 4 strikeouts. His slider was down 205 RPM, so notable. Luis Garcia at the Tigers, 6 innings, 2 runs, 5 strikeouts. After failing to throw a quality start in his first 9 starts, he now has 5 quality starts in his last 6, and he has a 2.83 ERA on the season. Jose Berríos against Cleveland, 6 1/3, 1 run, 2 walks, 9 strikeouts. He has a 3.41 ERA, but it just kind of feels like Jose Berríos has been worse than that. I don't know if you guys feel that same way, but
Has he been like really good lately?
He has quality starts in 4 of his last 5.
Yeah, because it did. Yeah, in like mid-May, his ERA was closer to 4. Mm-hmm. So he's got a 3.03 ERA over the last 5. I guess that was entering tonight, so it's even lower than that. So I guess that's probably why it feels like he's been worse. And also,
he's been steadier, so it feels like he's been worse.
Yeah, and also, so many guys had much lower ERAs at that point in the season that it kind of probably made him seem worse than he was.
Yeah.
We should probably talk a little bit about Zach Davies, who did throw 6 no-hit innings, 5 walks to 4 strikeouts. So, all right, against the Dodgers, it's a very odd line, but he's 38% rostered, and he's at Milwaukee next week. Revenge game. Scott, any interest in Zach Davies as a single start streamer?
I mean, I thought about him to round out my 10 sleeper pitchers for next week. Ended up going with Sam Long at Arizona instead. That was, of course, before I saw the results from this game. But I don't know. He walked 5. He entered the start with 4.4 walks per 9. And he's not a strikeout guy. He's one of the worst strikeout pitchers. I don't really see what there is to be enthusiastic about with Zach Davies.
This has John Gant written all over it. Zach Davies is a better pitcher than John Gant, but
except Zach Davies already has a 4.31 ERA and a whip around 1.5. So
Davies at his best has good control. So Davies throwing 6 shutout innings with what was it, 5 walks?
Yeah.
That's really, really hard for me to get excited about.
Yeah. All right, the call to the pen, some bullpen updates. The Tampa Bay Rays had J.P. Feireisen pitch in the 9th inning in a tie game. He faced the heart of the Red Sox lineup. On the other side, Matt Barnes allowed a run in a tie game, took his 2nd loss of the season. I believe it came on a wild pitch. For Cleveland, James Karinchak got his 9th save. Emmanuel Clase hasn't pitched since June 21st, so I think he could have been available. I didn't see any updates saying that he wasn't. Karinchak has the last 2 saves for Cleveland. Emmanuel Clase had the 2 saves before that. So whoever you think is going to get the next save, flip a coin and let me know, because there's no rhyme or reason that I can tell for Cleveland's bullpen. The streamers for the weekend, to stream or not to stream, we'll start with Friday. John Gray's return at the Brewers. Griffin Canning at Tampa Bay. John Lester at the Marlins. Kwanghyun Kim versus the Pirates. Johnny Cueto versus the A's, and Dane Dunning versus the Royals.
I think yesterday I said Lester and Gray were kind of on an island on their own, and maybe this group of pitchers has made Scott nauseous given his reaction.
I just wonder who lives this way, who honestly is out there choosing between these pitchers to start on Friday, because it wouldn't be me.
I think John Lester could have a good start against Miami.
I'm saying
you just got to get through their 2 good hitters.
I'm thinking Griffin Canning's my favorite here, actually, just because I think he's the best pitcher.
I don't hate Kwanghyun Kim versus the Pirates. So there you go. Between the 3 of us, we give you 4 different suggestions, and Scott actually hates all of them. For Saturday, Shane McClanahan. This is actually a better list. Shane McClanahan versus the Angels. Adrian Hauser at home versus the Rockies. Alex Cobb at the Rays, revenge game. JT Brubaker at the Cardinals. Antonio Senzatella at the Brewers. And Zach Thompson versus the Nationals.
It's always Brubaker. No, I mean, obviously Shane McClanahan first.
Yeah, McClanahan, he shouldn't be a streamer.
Yeah.
He's less than 70% rostered, too. It's him and Jonathan India. come on, get that up. We have to get those roster rates higher for both.
I mean, McClanahan, he's a no-brainer in any points league where you can start him as an RP. And even in roto leagues, given how many injuries there are, like, you're telling me you can't find room for this guy in your roster?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think I had Brubaker at St. Louis and Hauser against the Rockies, so not a Coors Field. I do think I had them both on my 10 sleeper pitchers entering the week. So definitely Saturday is definitely a better day for streaming than Friday is.
Didn't mention the second best pitcher among this group.
Oh, man.
There's a guy with a 29% strikeout rate, a 7% walk rate, and a 61% ground ball rate.
Is it Zach Alex, Thompson?
Oh. Alex Cobb has been, by the ways that we traditionally understand pitching in the sabermetric era, has been really, really good this season.
Nope.
And he's got a good matchup. The Rays aren't good against right-handed pitchers.
Nope.
Start Alex Cobb.
Nope.
6 innings, 8 strikeouts, guaranteed.
Nope.
Whoa.
Nope. I'm looking at it right now. A 2.40 FIP, a 2.59 XFIP, a 3.07 Sierra. Been there before with Alex Cobb. Not really, though. Not doing it. Sunday, if you want to trust Chris, then start
Alex Cobb. He hasn't had a FIP below 4 since 2014 when he had a 2.87 ERA. Alex Cobb, keep sleeping on Alex Cobb. That's all I'm going to say.
All right. Sunday, to stream or not to stream, Cole Irvin at the Giants, Sam Long versus the A's, Brady Singer at the Rangers, Ross Stripling versus the Orioles, Patrick Sandoval at the Rays, and Jake Odorizzi at the Tigers.
Ross Stripling against the Orioles. I can be enthusiastic about him, genuinely.
Odorizzi at the Tigers, I have no problem with.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good, I guess, too.
Odorizzi, that's probably the one.
And if I had to choose a third, Patrick Sandoval at Tampa Bay, though I do like Stripling and Odorizzi quite a bit more. Let's wrap up the week with some fantasy justice. Chris?
Hey.
I just played.
Yeah.
All right, there you go. This one's from Sam French, who was actually in our podcast. Points League, one of our podcast leagues last year. Recently, one of the teams in my league offered me Nelson Cruz, and the Cubs just finished off the no-hitter. A combined no-hitter for the Cubs against the Los Angeles Dodgers. Okay. Recently, one of the teams offered me Nelson Cruz for Alek Manoah and Shane McClanahan. I took that offer happily, feeling like I got the better end of the deal, but he was in need of pitching even before his ace glass now went down. He's been in the league forever and is great. If he wants to make the deal, that's his call. That night, Byron Buxton, who was on his team, got hit in the hand and broke it. The next morning, he texted me asking to cancel the trade because of the injury and also saying he hadn't meant to offer it in the first place. If he had said that when I first accepted it, I would have canceled. But basically 24 hours had passed before he brought it up. I didn't want to cancel the trade, but figured that considering I was the commissioner and involved with the league, I might be biased. I offered him two alternatives to me outright canceling the trade. One, we could pick it up, put it up to vote to the league and let the majority decide. Or two, we could pick an unbiased member of the league to act as a de facto commissioner. I thought that was more than fair. He said he would prefer one, but that if the trade went through, he would likely stop playing for the rest of the year. Interest of peace, I caved and voted against my own trade, giving him the numbers he needed to squash it. Was I being unfair here, or was he being unreasonable?
I love it when someone's own participation is used as leverage. Like, just so childish. Like, what?
Look, the commissioner handled this the right way. That guy's being a baby.
There's no way that you reverse this trade. There's no way.
He texted me asking me to cancel the trade because of the Byron Buxton injury, and also he never meant to offer it in the first place. Like, come on, buddy. Come on, buddy. I was born in the morning, but not earlier this morning.
Yeah, that sounds like a backup argument you bring in when you're losing the initial argument. You know, I never meant to offer it in the first place.
Like, that's like, come on, buddy.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
That's I wouldn't have reversed it. Even if I was the commissioner.
I'm fine with the commissioner doing it. That's a very selfless act. He didn't have to. But if that guy was going to throw a temper tantrum, commissioner does have to operate in the best interest of the league.
Boo. Boo. Boo to whoever did that.
Yeah. But make fun of him and like make sure the league knows that he was being a big baby. Maybe change like the cover image of your league to a Photoshop of him in like a bonnet with a pacifier.
So to answer your question, the person you traded with was being unreasonable, Sam. So make sure you let him listen to this and know that that was the case. All right. Justice has been served.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, whoa.
All right. For Chris and Scott, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again on Monday. Bye-bye.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.